But I am very privileged to be here presenting on behalf of my colleagues both from Canada and Uganda on an aspect of our cervical cancer screening program that specifically looked at health communication and the development of a health education intervention. I don't have any relevant disclosures. This project is funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, as well as the Women's Health Research Institute that's based in Vancouver, British Columbia. The story starts with cervical cancer globally, and many of you will know that cervical cancer disproportionately affects women in low and middle income countries. And you can see from the dark red areas there that one of the greatest burden is really in sub-Saharan Africa. And circled in black is Uganda in East Africa. And Uganda has one of the highest rates of cervical cancer globally. Cervical cancer is the most common cancer in women in sub-Saharan Africa. And the thing to remember about cervical cancer is that it's not one of those mysterious cancers. We actually know its natural history. We know what causes it. And not only do we have excellent primary prevention for cervical cancer in the form of the bivalent and the quadrivalent HPV vaccine, we actually have excellent secondary prevention tools as well, where we can detect precancer stages as well as early cervical cancer, but there's very effective treatments. So the fact that there's such a disproportionate amount of cervical cancer is really a great tragedy. And often this is due to limited infrastructure and other competing health priorities in these low-resource countries. Now, the Aspire collaboration began in 2006, and it's a partnership between partners in British Columbia, Canada, as well as at Makerere University in Kampala, Uganda. And the main partners are the University of British Columbia, where I'm from, Makerere University, as well as the BC Centre for Disease Control, where the principal investigator, Gina Ogilvie, is based as well. And the idea behind Aspire is to have a community-based cervical cancer screening strategy. And it's based not on visual inspection with acetic acid, as many programs are. It's based on women collecting their own specimens and screening for the human papillomavirus. And our model is looking at women collecting these swabs in their homes and places of work, trying to decrease the barriers to screening. And the ultimate goal of Aspire is to bridge the gap between research and community development. So building capacity on the community level, but also building capacity within Uganda among their researchers and academics to perform this research as well. We started with an acceptability study in 2010. We did a feasibility study the next year, screening a cohort of women. Last year, we were able to very successfully recruit for an RCT, comparing self-collected swabs for HPV to VIA, visual inspection with acetic acid, that's the standard of care in Uganda currently. And there's ongoing follow-up with this. And we've also looked specifically at women living with HIV and their lived experience, as well as their awareness of cervical cancer and their engagement in screening processes. Give you an idea of what the communities like that we're working in. Kisenyi is a very densely populated urban community, very close to the center of Kampala, and it's known for very low socioeconomic indicators. And this project came out of a voiced desire by community members to develop locally relevant health education interventions around cervical cancer screening and specifically around the Aspire project. And because of this, we really wanted to make this a community-based participatory project, because it's really the community asking to develop this this tool. And as a result, we wanted to involve, obviously, community members and stakeholders in Aspire in the community level, but also our academic experts and those involved at a tertiary care level as well. To start off with, we started with four key informants, and these were women who were leaders in Kisenyi in their community and were very familiar with cervical cancer screening work. So, for example, one of them was a village chairperson. Another one was a previous council member on Kampala City Council. So very, these women were leaders in their community and very knowledgeable. And it was from these key informant interviews that we developed the discussion guides that were used in the subsequent community forum. The first community forum was in the community of Kisenyi, largely community members, and also some of the healthcare workers who work at the health center in Kisenyi. And the second forum took place at the tertiary care hospital, which is Mulago Hospital in Kampala. And this included several specialist gynecologists, as well as nurse midwives, nurses, and a fair amount of trainees, both from nursing, midwifery, and obstetrical residents. And because we truly wanted to bring the knowledge back to the community and have the community members have the final say over what the themes we were to draw regarding this health education intervention, we then transcribed everything from the first two forums. We used qualitative software to code it. And we brought back the themes in a third forum back to the community participants who had participated in the initial forum for them to see what the tertiary care providers had to say and how things differed. Now, the key themes that came out of this qualitative process were content, format, language, message delivery, and issues around target population. Interestingly, the content, the tertiary care providers thought it was very important that women understand the natural history of cervical cancer and what happens if it's detected earlier versus what treatment options when it's more advanced. Now, women in the community were much more interested in just having the process demonstrated. Now, obviously, because this is a screening tool that's in the hands of the women, so it's the women collecting, doing the screening and collecting their own swab, so this probably contributes quite a bit to the feeling that community members would really want to know how they're going to collect that swab. Is it going to hurt? We really need some demonstration to be part of the content of this health education intervention. As far as the format, community members very much felt that the most important thing was to have an experienced peer that is, demonstrating and explaining the process of screening and why it's important. Whereas the tertiary care providers, obviously, they want to have the final say, and they thought it would be very important to have a content expert that participated in the health education intervention. Language is also obviously important as far as people's mother tongue, and the majority of women in Kisenyi do speak Luganda. However, there's a large Somali immigrant population as well, so this was brought up as an issue. However, more important than the language itself was the message delivery. So how will we deliver the message of cervical cancer screening in a way that's locally appropriate? One of the big challenges is the ambiguity of language around cervical cancer. So in Luganda, there's no word for cervical cancer. And what they normally use is a description that is the equivalent to women's cancer. Now, that could mean breast cancer, uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, or cervical cancer, all of which have very different etiologies and symptoms. So this was a key issue. And it was thought that there really had to be a balance between having a description of cervical cancer that was very much locally understandable and relevant, but that was also medically accurate. And this is something that there's ongoing work with in the community. Helping to try to define this. The target population was another key thing. Obviously, there's populations that don't engage in care at the health center, and so for anyone who's done much community health work, the use of other community organizations is critically important. And for the participants in Kiseni, the use of church communities and mosques was a very important thing that they wanted to see for these interventions. The other thing that has come up several times in different projects that Aspire has done is the involvement of men. And it's, you know, it's cervical cancer screening. We're not screening men. And so much of the involvement and all of our leaders in the Aspire project are women on a community level. But the involvement of men is a very key thing. And this is something that both women in Kiseni and the tertiary care participants agreed upon. So, for example, if you have a woman who is collecting a swab in her home, a vaginal swab, and her partner walks in and sees her, sees that she's testing herself for something, there's a huge amount of implications in their relationship for what happens. And as an example, in our RCT, we have 250 women in each arm, and the only participant that was found to be HPV positive that declined further follow-up, the reason given was that her husband did not want her to have follow-up for it. So this is a really huge issue. And historically in Kiseni, for example, with the HIV education and other reproductive health education, that women and men have been separated for the health education. And the reasoning behind this is because, you know, they'll be more willing to share, they'll be more open about their experiences. But the women in our community forum really thought that women and men should be in the same room. excuse me. And this is something that we're trialing on an ongoing basis. And then the other issue, as I mentioned regarding the language, is the Somali population. So not only is there a huge language barrier, they're also a very marginalized population within Kiseni, and there are many barriers for them to care, for them to access care. So our conclusions from this foray into community-based participatory research regarding a health education intervention was really that the ultimate say in what the health education intervention looks like really needs to give a disproportionate amount of emphasis on the knowledge users, so the community members, because they're the ultimate ones that are going to be benefiting from this. Obviously, lay leadership is something that's very important, and that's well known in many global health interventions. And the involvement of male partners in the educational process. I wanted to mention just a comment on community-based projects, and I think this is a really important question that many of us need to continue to ask ourselves when we're involved in global health and community health, is when are our projects truly community-based, and when are they just placed in a community, but really all the decisions are being made at higher levels. We've already decided on the intervention that we want to choose. And I would argue that the vast majority of community-based projects are actually just community-placed, and they're not fully taking into account the experiences of the community members. And this is challenging in global health work, but I think it's really something that we need to pursue in an ongoing manner and be very honest about what our projects actually are. So we have been able to incorporate the community preferences in our ongoing cervical cancer education programs, and this is something that there's ongoing monitoring of as well. There are several publications that have come out of the Aspire project, and I'd encourage you to check them out if you're interested in them. Many of them are open access. Also, feel free to email me. And our website, aspireafrica.ca, also has another aspect of health communication and knowledge translation on it. It's a documentary that was screened earlier this week at the film festival, so feel free to check that out as well. Thank you very much. questions? Yeah, so that's a huge thing that's come up, and we've done several other focus groups. We did a series of focus groups looking at barriers to screening as well, and that's another aspect that came up was the male involvement. And we currently have a student working on doing some focus groups with men specifically. But the issue of one of the most common questions is, well, if I'm HPV positive, what do I tell my partner? Like, well, does he need to get screened? What's going to happen to him? And with the challenges in accurate terminology, even around the type of cancer it is, it's a challenging discussion to have. And it's an area that we really need to work on a lot more. And it's been fascinating to see the change, the paradigm shift from treating cervical cancer as a cancer versus now it's a sexually transmitted infection. And in, you know, across the globe, that's been something that you know, we've had to change the way that we educate people around cervical cancer. So yeah, we have a lot of work to do there. Absolutely. Yeah, so the model for screening, for example, in a high-income country, for example, British Columbia is going to be switching from pap smear cytology-based screening to just HPV screening. And if you're HPV negative, you don't need to be screened again for 5 years. However, in our in a low-resource setting where there's no screening accessible at all, the modeling that Aspire is based on, a lot of which comes out of Denny's work in South Africa, is actually based on once-in-a-lifetime screening. So we start screening a bit later. We screen women over age 30. And if they are HPV negative, the ultimate risk of becoming reinfected in the future, and because the natural history of cervical cancer is a fairly slow progression, there's a fairly low chance that they will develop cervical cancer in the future. But it is a somewhat controversial topic. That is such a fantastic question, and I think as researchers in global health, we all come across that issue, I don't have any easy answers for you other than to be very creative. So, for example, with the for cervical cancer specifically, there's really not specific funding that people are really excited about, you know, dumping into this project with so many other health issues. So some of our funding has actually been funneled through our work with women living with HIV in Kisenyi and screening them for cervical cancer. And I think that was obviously we know that women with HIV are much higher risk for cervical cancer, but the women themselves and the community themselves brought up this population as a really key area for us to target on. And then we were able to leverage a chunk of the HIV funds to be used in a larger project. And I think that the trend away from siloing health projects for specific, specifically maternal health, specifically HIV, and bringing it more together into integrated reproductive care, that's really been another another method that we've used. So as part of Aspire, we also provided a screening for other STIs as well in a self-collected fashion. And so in that way, we're really trying to, you know, as far as funding, just portray it as more of reproductive healthcare in general versus specifically cervical cancer. And I think that's probably that can be applied to a whole bunch of different areas as well. But it's a great question. It's challenging because there's always competition for funding, right? So.
Put our hands for the presenters. Four great presentations. Now the floor is open for generic questions or any specific questions to any one of them, if you'd like, or any comments you want to make. I have a couple of comments to make, and you can also add. Communication, you know, is not really end in itself. It's a means to an end. We want to see some result in the community, and communication really for behavior change, as one of our presenters said, it takes time. But sometimes for some people they don't take time because they can change their behavior very quickly, but others may take time. So it depends on the value system, it depends on the community, it depends on the other family members. It depends on his or her education and exposure and knowledge and many other things. So it becomes so big at some point of time and so vast. And that's why we are continuing to learn from the community. And one of our presenters said, we do work in the community, but decisions are made outside and from top level. And that really creates sometimes problems. So what we would like to see actually that in community-based program, we want that community owns the program. And that is not an easy task. It's very, very tough. And to help them to own the program, whatever we have learned in Asia or Africa or in specific countries, that if we really take care in communicating with them and involve them, make them interested, then they can own it. And while doing that, we need to be very, very careful about our message. And message has to be audience specific, has to be catering their needs and address their needs, address their problems. We need to make communication critically thinking about the time, that when we are making the communication, when they are ready to take the message. And again, what channel we are using, sometime face-to-face, sometime social media, sometime other traditional media, and also who are really crafting the messages. Sometimes that also very, very important. And finally, the support that some of the audience raised very critically important question about funding, because sometimes we are so funder-driven, and this is very, very critical in terms of development work. And we always need to look for more funding, but for doing that, we need to sell our output and product. And one of our great colleagues said that, well, if you want to continue your funding, then you produce excellent results. And the excellent result will bring more funding. But it's easy to say, but very difficult to do. Okay, I that's what I wanted to make, but I want to leave a couple of minutes to make other comments. Any presenter can make our comments or